Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about aquatic invasives to begin the program today. These species have a big effect on our waterways, but there are things you can do to help stop their spread, and we'll find out what's going on within the state on an organized basis to help fight those aquatic species. Tim Campbell back with us. Great to have him back. He is an outreach specialist with the UW Sea Grant programs and specializes a bit in aquatic invasive species. So he's got lots of good information, and certainly we're looking forward to hearing from you. What questions do you have about aquatic invasive? Have you had some experiences with them? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tim Campbell, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
I love this idea of a 4th of July landing blitz. Yeah. Sounds like almost like World War II kind of, you know, a landing blitz. But Wisconsin's been doing this now for a few years.
I think we're at our 13th year.
Yeah.
I should have probably checked before I came today, so I had that number. But we've been doing it for quite a while, longer than I've been around.
So what's the thinking behind it?
So we know the 4th of July weekend is one of the busiest boating weekends in the state, and it's not just the busiest boating or one of the busiest boating weekends, but we also have a lot of visitors, and we get a lot of infrequent boaters on the 4th of July weekend. And so those are people that maybe haven't been reached with our aquatic invasive species message yet, and maybe don't know the steps they can take to prevent the spread of invasive species, inspecting their boat for plants, animals, and mud, removing all that, draining your water and letting your boat dry as much as possible. And so it's a good time to reach those people that maybe aren't already on board with our message. But then there's also a lot of folks out that are on board. They know how to clean their boats. They know how to take action. And so we like interacting with them this weekend and just thanking them for their efforts. Mm-hmm. We have some really fun prompts to give away. We have Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers towels, keychains. If you're really lucky, you might get a Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers trucker hat. So a lot of ways we can thank folks for taking action.
And when you say we, who is we?
So we have partners all across the state helping us out with this effort. So we organize this effort through the University of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin DNR, but we have county governments, regional nonprofits, lake associations, and even just volunteers, people that live on the lakes that care about their lakes or rivers and want to be out and talking to boaters. So I think we have more than 350 sites participating in the landing blitz this year.
So let's say I'm taking my boat to a landing site to drop it in the water, what's going to happen? What'll I see?
So you'll probably see some folks out, our Clean Boats, Clean Waters watercraft inspectors, with their blue shirts that say Clean Boats, Clean Waters on them. They'll stop you, ask you a few questions. It should take maybe 30 seconds to a minute. They'll probably ask you, where did you last boat? Do you know what the prevention actions are? And explain those if you need that information. If you know what you're up to, they'll probably give you a towel and thank you for your efforts. And if you'd like some more information, they'll walk around your boat with you and kind of show you how to take action.
So that's pretty much any changes from other previous years? Anything new that you...
So no big change in how we're doing it here in Wisconsin, but a really big change for this year is that this effort's now gone Great Lakes-wide. Other states have adopted a similar model as us in the past couple of years. Michigan now does a landing blitz, and then Minnesota and New York both have watercraft inspection programs, but no landing blitz like what we have. But this is the first year that all of the states and provinces on the Great Lakes are participating in a landing blitz. So every Great Lakes state or province has people out at the landings, educating boaters, all with the same message, which is great. It's really exciting to see us all having the same methods and messages from the states that have already been doing this to a few years. And then there's states that have never had watercraft inspection programs that are just starting and participating, which is makes me really happy.
Yeah. And so this blitz itself, how long does it run from to when?
So the regional blitz starts on Friday and goes through the Sunday after 4th of July. Some states will be running it a little bit longer. We in Wisconsin are running our blitz the 4th of July, which is Thursday through the,
through the 8th. Weekend.
Yeah, through the weekend.
So don't be afraid if you see somebody You bring your boat. And when you pull your boat, I assume that there's a lot of care or discussion when you pull your boat out.
Yes. And as the prevention specialist or expert, I really like to focus on what happens as you pull your boat out, because if you clean your boat as you come out, then it doesn't really matter what you do when you get to the next lake because your boat's already clean. So we really prefer to talk to people as they're coming out. And that's when I think your actions make the biggest difference when you're leaving the boat landing.
Yeah. I could see problem. You know, a guy who does it myself, I do a lot of musky fishing. And so I might fish one lake and then I might drive 20 miles and get in another lake. And then I might, you know, the next day I might be in two other lakes. You really need to watch it every time you get out of the water, get your boat out of the water.
Yep. And we have people that have successfully just made it a part of their boating habits. So just like you strap the boat down to the trailer, you connect everything, you know, something you do additionally is just check your trailer for plants hanging off of it and drain the water. It's just one extra step that takes just a little bit more time.
Yeah, and could be very, very important. Jack in Nisida has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, you stress all this about the boats and the mud and the weeds. What about when we get these massive floods that just takes all this invasive species, roads wash out? I mean, it goes across entire counties sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks for the comment, Jack. So we know that floods can move aquatic invasive species. The USGS and kind of their invasive species research team is really looking at this in terms of hurricanes along the Gulf Coast. We'll see big storm surges with hurricanes, and they can map out the new watersheds that invasive species and coastal areas maybe have access to due to flooding. So it's something we're thinking about. And here in Wisconsin, we're mostly seeing that in maybe a downstream manner if we see really big flooding. But I think it's something we're not quite as concerned about. And while floods could move aquatic invasive species, we know the most likely way for invasive species to move to new bodies of water are through human behavior and very likely recreational boating. So that's why we really focus on recreational boaters and, you know, things like the landing blitz to educate them, because we know it's something we can do to have a positive impact on the rate of spread.
And Steve in Boulder Junction wondered if, you know, is it inevitable that there's going to be invasives in all our lakes and these efforts just slow the spread down? Or
if that were the case, I don't think I'd be able to get up in the morning and do my job. So what I really believe is that every invasion is human mediated or caused by human behavior. And we know that human behavior can change. If we think about recycling, that's something that people never had an idea that that was something they were supposed to do. And people change their behavior, so recycling is the norm, and that's what you do. I think invasive species prevention is really similar. As people start to become on board with prevention actions, we can really reduce the risk. And we're seeing that here in Wisconsin, that we've had a study where we looked at the rate of spread over 5 years, and it hasn't changed, which means that our prevention actions are having an impact on the number of new invasions in lakes. So it's not inevitable. We can slow or even stop the spread of invasive species.
Tim Campbell, our guest today, the Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist with the UWC Grant Program. Questions for him about aquatics, invasives. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And maybe if you've got a photo of an invasive, or what you don't know if it's invasive or not in your waterway, you can email that to us as well at ideas@wpr.org. Tim can take a look at it, and we can make a comment on it. Let's turn to the invasives themselves. Which ones cause the most trouble on our waters?
So I think the answer to that's really context dependent on, you know, what your lake is, where you live, or lake or river. In the Great Lakes, the quagga mussel is a really prolific invasive species, especially in Lake Michigan. There's new maps showing quagga mussel distribution. You could probably walk across the bottom of Lake Michigan now entirely on quagga mussels. So that's really changing the food web and the kind of fish that really thrive in Lake Michigan. But then you're kind of in our inland lake, zebra mussels can cause problems, Eurasian water milfoil, starry stonewort, aquatic plants. And then in some of our streams, we're seeing New Zealand mud snails that can impact specifically trout fishing streams.
Oh, man. So what are the quagga mussels? What are they? So they just...
Yeah, they're
prolific.
Yep, really close relative to the zebra mussels. Actually, zebra mussels were in the Great Lakes first, but then quagga mussels have came a little bit after them, have really outcompeted all of the zebra mussels, but really same impacts. They're filtering out phytoplankton from the water and biofouling structures that if you're like a water treatment plant or a power plant, you have an intake pipe and zebra quagga mussels clog that up. That costs you money to maintain that pipe.
Yeah, how do they maintain it? Is there an electrical charge you can put on the pipe or to keep them off? Or
so there are pesticides that they can use to kill the mussels, but then the mussels have these Bissell threads that allow them to attach to surfaces that are really strong. So even if you kill the mussels, they don't always release from whatever they're attached to. So you might have to send a diver down to scrape off any fouled infrastructure.
Maria in Lake Geneva, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Maria. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We're in our car. I'm sorry. We live in Lake Geneva, and we have an invasive species that they've discovered. It's called a starry stonewort. And they were going to dredge part of the lake where it's been found. We have a wonderful agency, Geneva Lake Environmental Agency, led by Ted Peters. And they're going to treat that area of the lake with two chemicals, Cutrin Plus and Hydrothol. And it's supposed to work just specifically on that particular species. And they have the permission of the DNR to try that. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, thanks, Maria. So the starry stonewort.
Yep.
Starry stonewort. Uh-huh.
Yep. Thanks, Maria. Yeah, starry stonewort's an invasive macroalgae, so it looks a lot like a plant, but it's really an algae. And it can move on watercraft like any other plant, but it also has these little bulbils or, you know, for lack of a better term, like seed that you can move around that can spread the algae. And something that... You know, I think we've done a really good job in Wisconsin on is understanding aquatic plant management and what is effective in terms of managing the impacts of invasive aquatic plants. And we have a really good handle on things like Eurasian water milfoil. Starry stonewort's relatively new. It doesn't react the same way to herbicides as Eurasian water milfoil. So, you know, I think the DNR and partners, when we find new populations of starry stonewort, are really doing a good job of investing in research to try to figure out the best way to manage it when it shows up on the landscape.
And it sounds like Maria is talking about Geneva Lake. And Geneva Lake, the association down there sounds like a pretty active association.
Yes. And I know everyone down there is concerned with it. The DNR is working with them to manage it the best as we can.
Yeah. Maria, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Tib Campbell, our guest from the UWC grant program. Questions for him about aquatic invasive species, or maybe you've got an experience to share like Maria just did. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your photo if you want, or questions to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at aquatic invasive species today on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller here with my guest Tim Campbell from the UWC Grant Program. Again, join in, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@WPR.org. Let's take another call. John in Appleton will give you a chance. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you very much. We have a family cottage near Shawnee, Wisconsin, not on Shawnee Lake, on a smaller lake. We've been on that lake 50 years, and in the last 5 years, it has become a musky lake. Is it possible for a native species to also be considered an invasive species? Because we no longer have panfish. You can't catch a panfish on that lake anymore.
Hmm. So we're talking about, in this case, muskies maybe eating the panfish, but is it possible for a native species to become invasive?
So some of, I think the answer to this is just semantics on nuisance species and invasive species. So invasive species, kind of the working definition, is a non-native species that has environmental, economic harm or harm to human health. So if it's native, it can't meet that invasive definition. That being said, there can be nuisance species that are native species. You know, just an aggressive species that can become really abundant, have problems. So some people might find some native aquatic plants to be a nuisance species, and mm-hmm. they might be managed the same way as an invasive plant species because they're having some similar impacts, but we wouldn't call it invasive. Things that are native in Wisconsin can be invasive elsewhere. You know, a good example might be the northern pike, that native, great sport fish here in Wisconsin, but a place like Alaska, it's unwanted and invasive there. So in this specific scenario, if muskie have never been present in that lake and they were introduced, there could be some changes in the food web. But I think there's so many things going on that it would be hard to pin it on any one thing. You know, if we had warmer or colder winters or, you know, different nutrient flows, there's a whole bunch of things that interact that
can also have an impact.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So what, you know, John here in Appleton, what's the, you know, he's concerned about his lake, obviously. He's been there 50 years or whatever. Where would he go just to check in with the local, whoever's in charge? Would it be the local DNR? Is there office in Appleton?
Yeah, there will be a fisheries biologist that would be in charge of kind of fisheries management for those lakes. And so I don't know if that person's out of Green Bay or Oshkosh, but I'd be happy to try to connect John with those folks. And then there's also invasive species experts that work specifically in Shawano County and that area as well.
Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it. Ted in Williams Bay, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ted.
Hello. I wanted to just kind of fill in some information for Maria's call regarding the management strategy for the Starry Stonewort in Geneva Lake.
Yeah.
I am the director of the Geneva Lake Environmental Agency, which is the local entity charged with managing that lake. And we found Starry Stonewort last August in an isolated lagoon. And our hope was that we could have dredged it this fall, but we just couldn't put things together. So we are doing chemical treatments, as I think Maria had mentioned. Two treatments this summer to try to get to the vegetative part of the plant or the green plant. But as your guest mentioned, the real problem with Starry Stonewort is the bulbils, or as you referred to them, the seeds, because they're in the sediment in the bottom, and it's difficult to get to them with any kind of a chemical treatment. So this fall, we will be going in and dredging about 2 feet of sediment out of that whole part of the lagoon with the hope that we're going to eliminate the bulbils and hopefully be successful at eradicating this plant in Geneva Lake before it gets out of that lagoon.
Oh,
lake itself.
That sounds good. Ted, how did it get in there in the first place?
Well, we don't know. I think we have a sense that a lot of the aquatic invasives are relocated or transported by boats. This lagoon happens to be located right next to a launch site. So we can only guess, but speculate that it came in accidentally on a boat or in bilge water. Those bulbils are pretty small. They're the size of a grain of rice, so they can hide in a gob of mud on the bottom of your anchor if you don't clean it off. So, but we're aggressively going after it, and chemical treatment was not our first choice, but because we couldn't dredge in the fall, we thought we'd try to knock down the plant during the summer so that we go in and dredge. We don't have as much to deal with in the fall.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Ted. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ted.
Really appreciate that update. That sounds like a pretty successful management plan. And Wisconsin has a Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan, which, you know, that's not the sexiest title I've ever heard of. Are the most exciting, but there's some exciting parts to that plan.
Yeah, and it has a really excited spokesperson in me because it's been something I've been working on with our core team of DNR and extension and other AIS partners core team. And so our first management plan was drafted in 2002 and hasn't been updated since. So we started this updating process at the beginning of 2015 and have recently just finished it with some DNR approvals and approval of the Fish and Wildlife Service at the national level, which is really exciting. So if we look back to 2002, you know, Amazon still only sold books then. So you know, in that time, you know, the whole internet pathway has become a thing. And there's just a whole bunch of things that have changed since 2002 that weren't present in our 2002 management plan. So a lot of those things are now present in our updated plan.
And what's give us some highlights of the changes that are in there.
So I think the biggest change is from our 2002 plan is that our 2002 plan really focused on species and things we could do to address those invasive species. And in our updated plan, we're following the lead of Michigan and the Lake Superior Prevention Plan and doing a pathway focus or invasion pathway. That's all the different ways invasive species move around. And so we believe by really focusing on those pathways, we can better understand those pathways of invasion, systematically work to address them and close them. And these actions work across all invasive species. So if there's something that could be invasive that you know shows up 10 years from now and isn't reflected in our plan, we still have a framework to deal with that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I want to think about zebra mussels. Just take an example of an invasive, and I've lived on, fished a lot on Lake Monona in Madison, so I'll use that as an example where zebra mussels were introduced, forget the year, to the waterway.
I think they were established 3 or so years ago, although there have maybe been some failed introduction events before that.
Yeah, there were, okay, so it's only been, I know there were some failed
yeah.
attempts before that. So for is there, for a lake like that or any other lake, when something like that gets in, is there a point where there's some sort of equilibrium reached with an invasive, let's say the zebra mussel, for example, or does it just keep going?
Kind of in invasive species ecology, there's you know, this classic boom-bust curve that gets talked about, and that when something is introduced and becomes established, its population really explodes and takes advantage of all of the resources it has available to it. And there's not as many controls, either kind of environmental or within the food web, you know, like predatory controls. And so over time, the system kind of will adjust to the presence of that invasive species, and it tends to work its way into the food web somehow. So maybe things begin to eat it. So if we look at like quagga mussels in Green Bay, Lake Whitefish, which used to not really eat mussels. They used to eat diapiria and other little macroinvertebrates. But there's a lot of mussels now, so over time they've learned to eat the mussels and take advantage of that energy source. So they're not really controlling the population of mussels, but they're learning to take advantage of that resource, and you know that's kind of just fitting into the food web. So I think over time things will fit into the food web, and maybe some of the impacts will change a little bit, but then you'll see a different lake than what you had before.
Yeah, you definitely will see a different lake. You can trade in two questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you, maybe your own experiences, or maybe you just have a question about aquatic invasives. Marilyn emailed to ask about confinement agriculture, manure, and its effect on invasive species when it gets to our waterways.
Admittedly, not something I've thought a lot about, but I could say that when we have disturbed systems and big influxes of nutrients into a system, that could be something that either an existing invasive species or a new invasive species could really take advantage of. If you know, it's into a body of water where it's generally unsuitable, but that kind of big influx of pollution or contaminants, whatever it might be, all of a sudden degrades the system, maybe makes it suitable for that invasive species. It gives it kind of a beachhead for invasion if it were to get introduced there, and so then it could spread elsewhere.
So it could have some impact.
Yeah, it could have some impact.
But we're not for sure on it. Well, I've got a bunch of questions, too. There's a surface water grant program that I wanted to ask you about, but we have another caller online, so maybe we'll take that call first. Bob in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'd like you to address how to approach people when you find them at boat landings and gas stations and on the road that have all that gunk underneath their trailer or on their trailer without getting into an argument or a confrontation.
Yeah, that's a good question, Bob. Thanks for calling.
So we find that most boaters are actually really receptive to our message. That's really what we hear from a lot of our watercraft inspectors, that just a nice kind of conversational, educational approach. Hey, did you know that what you're transporting on your boat could be invasive or transporting invasive species, and that you can help protect our lakes if you remove that from your boat? That tends to work for a lot of people. If you have somebody that's a little bit more confrontational or not open to your message, if they're clearly violating the law, so they have plants hanging from their boats or their live wells are full, our conservation wardens will take either a license plate number or a boat registration and follow up with those folks to let them know what the law is regarding that. So that's something you can also do as well.
So what is the law?
So our NR40 invasive species law split into two parts. There's the prohibited and restricted species list, which I think Kelly and Mark actually talked a little bit about last week. And then we have a do not transport part of the law, which means that you need to take reasonable actions to prevent the spread of invasive species. And in terms of boating, that means picking off all of the plants, all the visible plants on your boat, and draining all of the water. So that's the law. So if you have any aquatic plant, native or invasive, that could result in a citation, or if you have a lot of water that you're transporting in your boat, either in your live wells or transom wells or something like that.
So you could be fined.
You could be fined.
All right. So there we go. And Bob, I hope that helped approach in a friendly manner and say, hey, I got to let you know.
Yep. And we know from the behavior change literature, social norms is a great way to help change people's behavior. So even if they're not receptive to your message, just being like, I clean my boat. Everyone I know cleans their boat as well. We'd appreciate it if you did too, and leave it at that. We know that that's something that can help change people's behaviors.
Thanks again. Let's talk now. I wanted to bring up this surface water grant program and what's going on with it. Explain the program first and then.
So the DNR gives away millions of dollars each year to support the work of local watershed groups to implement lake and river protection and restoration practices on the landscape. And currently, all of that's set up in a few different administrative codes and isn't the easiest for the Department of Natural Resources to manage. So we're going through a process right now to combine this all into one administrative code to make it a little easier to manage. But that also gives us the opportunity to redesign the program a little bit. And a big chunk of this is aquatic invasive species grants. And so currently, the public comment period is open for the code revisions. So if you are somebody that has applied for a surface water grant or like a lake and river grant or an AIS grant before, now's a great time to check out those proposed changes and provide any feedback on that.
And I'm wondering about, there are many lakes that fall under either federal properties that we have here in the state or state-owned properties where the state itself like may surround a lake. In those circumstances, what kinds of, are there actions taken?
Yes, and a lot of lakes may fall under kind of multiple either jurisdictions or stakeholder interest.
Yeah.
There might be a lake and a National Forest, with a lake association, but all of the partners work together to help manage that lake. So, you know, for example, if a lake association might want to see some aquatic invasive species prevention project happen on that lake, you know, they might draft up the grant, apply for it, but work with the Forest Service to help implement it, or something along those lines. So, you know, in cases of multiple, you know, interests, people are working really well together to manage those lakes.
Cy in Hudson, let's go to you next. Hi, Cy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have a question. We have a place on the Minong Floyd in Washburn County. That's on a dam. They're proposing, because we have Eurasian water milfoil, to do a 5-foot drawdown in October. And I'm wondering what your guest thinks the outcome of that would be in terms of getting rid of or affecting the milfoil.
No, 5 foot.
So I hate to punt on a question, but aquatic plant management is not my expertise. And I think that I would be giving you a probably a somewhat informed opinion, but not a great opinion on what exactly would happen. I'd have to do some research on that to really figure that out. And I have some colleagues within the DNR that know a lot about aquatic plant management, so I'd be happy to talk to them a little bit about it and get back to you, Cy, if you maybe send in your email or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, shoot us an email, Cy, to ideas@wpr.org. Just mention that, and Tim can get back to you with some more information. I would think if you draw down a lake 5 feet, that's going to go out a long ways from the shore.
It will have an impact on the aquatic plant community, but I think it could depend a lot on what the seed bank is, if it freezes, some of those sorts of things.
Yeah, okay. All right, Cy. Well, shoot us an email, and we'll see to it that Tim gets that. Thank you very much for calling. Joe in Wautoma, we'll go to you next. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I want to make a point that people who have pontoon boats in the lake, they sit around, but there's a slime that forms on the bottom of the pontoon. If you take the pontoon boat out, go to another lake, if you haven't removed that slime, you're going to deposit that slime in that lake. It's not visible when you put it on the trailer, but I know I have to go under my boat during the summer several times to remove the slime so I don't get zebra mussels on the pontoons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. So within NR40, I would need to double check to be sure, but I think there is an exemption for you know, attached algae and a general slime from slipped or docked boats. And so that being said, even though there might be an exemption for it, I think a best practice would be cleaning your boat. And so if you've had a boat that's been docked or slipped, or like a pontoon boat, letting it dry as long as possible before transporting it someplace, or if you have to move it in the same day, a pressure wash would be a great way to remove some of that. And if you're on a lake with zebra mussels, it takes about 24 hours for zebra mussels to start attaching to your boat. And so especially if you're on a lake with zebra mussels, drying or a pressure wash would be great before moving your boat.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How is climate change impacting our Wisconsin lakes, do you think?
So climate change can have a lot of different impacts on our lakes. And just recently, a team of researchers with the Wisconsin DNR, the University of Wisconsin, and a whole bunch of other researchers with some Wisconsin ties published a paper on the different impacts of climate change on Wisconsin lakes and different things that we could do about it. Mm-hmm. And so there might be changes in lake levels, changes to the kinds of invasive species that find a lake suitable, changes in fisheries, a bunch of different things. And I specifically helped out with the aquatic invasive species section. And so we're just looking into the future and trying to maybe foresee how things could be different in Wisconsin under climate change. And so with invasive species, there might be species that really aren't suitable in Wisconsin right now that might be able to move north and inhabit our lakes. Certain invasive species that we currently have that maybe aren't widespread could find the lakes more suitable in the future. And so within this paper, we just try to look at, you know, the existing science on some of this and what we can do about it to limit those impacts in the future.
Gerald emailed to ask this question about Lake Erie. Wasn't Lake Erie considered a dying lake until the ocean mussels in the lake started to clean the water? I think there may be more to it than that, if that was even partially a reason.
Yeah, so there's a difference between clean and clear. Zebra and quagga mussels are really good at making the water clear. If you look at Lake Michigan right now, it's, you know, as clear as ever. But I think something that, you know, if we're tying invasive species into that, there's been a lot of work done on all of the Great Lakes, especially through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, to really clean up the lakes, remove contaminated sediment, do habitat restoration projects. But I think we've done a really good job at slowing the number of new invasions, especially into the Great Lakes. You know, the last kind of established species we have in the Great Lakes would, due to like ballast water invasions, would be the bloody red shrimp in 2008. But so, you know, the systems have had a lot of time now to kind of recalibrate to the new species that are there. And so over time, I think things have improved just because we've cut down on the rate of change, not in just invasive species, but of all the different stressors we have on the lakes, that we've improved a lot of different things. So the presence of zebra mussels might have just been kind of a blip in all of the good things that have happened.
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with pollution control, I think, in Lake Erie.
Yep.
For sure. Well, what is the best place to get information on about invasives?
So the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant website has information on invasive species. The Wisconsin DNR website has information on invasive species. But I really like trying to connect people with a local source or a local contact to find that information, because there is so much information out there on invasive species, and it can really help to have an expert kind of cut through some of that to get you exactly what you want. And so on the DNR website, there is a contact list for county-level invasive species experts that you can engage with, and they can help find you the right information. So way you don't have to wade through all the stuff on the internet, because there's a lot of stuff there.
And where do you go on that site?
So if you go to the DNR website and keyword search aquatic invasive species, the aquatic invasive species homepage will come up, and there should be a link on that page for, you know, find a contact.
Well, Tim, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us, and I'm sure you'll be back and we'll be getting some updates along the way.
Awesome. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Tim Campbell is the Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist with the UW Sea Grant Program, and it's great to talk with him about what's going on with our aquatics, and I certainly look forward to another visit from him down the road. Are you planning to spend some time on the water? As a matter of fact, here we go. We've got 4th of July week coming up. A lot of people are going to be out on the water. What about canoeing and kayaking? We'll be talking about canoeing and kayaking, and what are some of the best places to go to put in your canoe or your kayak. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.